from Baltimore.
I'm Denise, I'm an addict.
Hey, Denise.
Hi, everybody. I don't know. It's, I never really know exactly what I'm going to share. I know that I have a topic. So, you know, I have just a little ritual that I do whenever I speak at a meeting or a workshop or I have a topic. So, basically, I've already gotten everything that I need to get because I've done some work and a little bit of, like, I got up this morning and I read step 10 and 11 in the basic text and it worked down why, and then I said some prayers and I made some notes for me, just some thoughts, some things that I didn't want to carry my book around, so I wrote something down that I might want to share. And then I just, like, whatever kind of rises up for me based on how I feel. So I've been in a lot of meetings the last couple days. I've heard a lot of things. I've heard a lot of stories. And I start getting confused. You know what I mean? And so I just, you know, I like to just center myself and just try to stick with what's my experience, strength, and hope. And, you know, Alan shares this a lot. That if, like, you sit in enough meetings and then you share something, it might sound like you're talking about what somebody else shared about, and you might be contradicting what somebody else said. And so I'm just going to try to stick with my experience, strength, and hope, and let the rest fall wherever it does. You know, I got to thinking today. I've had an amazing, like, couple days with my husband. Yesterday, we just had the most beautiful ride up here. You know, we went to the Flight 93 Memorial, which was just, you know, I just got in touch with, like, how I've become a person who can feel. You know, and I dropped to my knee. I want to say I dropped to both knees, but that hurt on concrete. You know, I'm a runner, and I'm really protective of my knees, so I dropped the one knee because my other knee is kind of like I'm protecting it. But I just felt, like, heartfelt. Like, I, you know, and my husband was rubbing his hands along the stone where everybody's name was, and then he came across Alan Anthony, his name.
Wow.
But that's Alan's first and last name, and this was the guy's first and middle name, but then the last name is dropped down. They have it on there, so it's like Alan Anthony, but the last name is down here, and it was like, the reality of that, like, I posted on my Facebook page, like, that we were at the memorial, and you know, the sign for me was like, stop and smell the roses, because you never know, you know, when it might be the last rose that you smell. And you know, and then we went into this really cool little shop, and we just, I don't know, I just could really feel the love in my relationship. Whatever could be happening, like, I just really felt connected to my husband. And you know, like, I'm with a man who we're driving down the road and he sees a sign that there's a covered bridge, and he's like, you know, we might never pass this way again. Like, we need to go and walk on the covered bridge. Like, you know, there was a time where it was the pedal to the metal. We ain't stopping for nothing. I don't care if you have to pee yourself. We have a destination. And what I've been able to achieve in my life and along with my husband in our life is that we know we're on the journey and it's not the destination. And I just, and then I got up this morning and I went for a run, and it's really different than running in the city because there were horses and cows and wildflowers and, you know, there was not a lot of traffic, and I could hear the sounds of the birds, and, like, I did this kind of meditation. And I stopped because I am surrounded with Narcotics Anonymous this weekend. I just stopped and took a breath to breathe in what Narcotics Anonymous has afforded me. You know, I could not get off my knees looking for white stuff that wasn't there. I couldn't get out of the closet. And I have a life that is beyond... If I got what I deserved, I would be dead or in prison or something like that. Not like running, talking to the cow on Plank Road. Like, let's talk to the cow. Hey, Mr. Cow. Said, <"Moo." laughs> Like, I don't know. We don't have sea cows in here. Anyway... You know, and then and I've been able to just share and recover. You know, Alan talks about how we're not campers. I think he's not telling the truth because every time we turn around, we're the camp out. So I think that we are officially, this is our second camp out in 2 months. Like, I think we're officially campers. So I had this idea in my head that the next time they have a camp out, they should have different topics. Like, the topic should go like this. Like how do you sleep comfortably on plywood? That should be a topic in a meeting. Like, we all need that suggestion. Like, I don't know. Like, do you take community showers? Or do you just, how long can you go without actually taking a shower? You know, like, how do you manage that decision? How do you walk in the dark on gravel and not fall down and bust your ass when you're over 50? You know what I mean? Like, those should be the topics in the workshop. You know what I mean? How do I keep rocks out of my Crocs? You know, and this is like what I live with up here. Like, I'm thinking, you know, so these are the topics. Anyway, my topic is the 10th and 11th step. And I got my sponsor early on because when I got clean, there wasn't a step guide. We had the basic text. There wasn't a whole lot of people really working steps. And she had, like, some bootleg photocopies of step work. And I had a couple sponsors, and it just really wasn't connecting. And she seemed like she was talking about these steps. And I'm a know-it-all, and I want to be... I don't think it was spiritually motivated. Maybe it was pain-motivated. But I just had this... I wanted to, like, work the steps. So I got her to be my sponsor, and that's what we did. I still have copies of those original steps. I don't really use them. I use some of the things from them. But, you know, when the step guide came out, I was like, you know what, I just need to. Even though at that point I hadn't actually worked the steps through the step guide, I began work using that in my recovery. And then eventually I did work 1 through 12 through the step guide with my sponsor, the current sponsor that I have today, which is not the first sponsor. I've had, like, three main sponsors in recovery. So, you know, I come in, I admit that I'm powerless, but in the first step, and then I'm unmanageable in the first step. But that's where the powerlessness and the unmanageability end for me. That doesn't mean that I don't constantly have a first step in many areas of my life. But once I acknowledge that, I can move on and begin to develop some power through steps 2 through 12. I can regain power of choice. I can be restored to sanity. I can, you know, make an attempt to stop doing the same things over and over again, expecting different results. I can stop doing the same things over and over again, knowing the results. I mean, this is a long journey, but slowly, slowly. And the first sane decision that I ever made was to just not pick up. You know, I was restored to sanity when I went to a meeting instead of going to a bar. I was restored to sanity when I called my sponsor instead of going to get drugs. You know, and that decision has grown and spread and manifested in every area of my life. You know, I began to be restored to sanity. I made a decision in the third step, and for me, the basis of my third step decision, you know, I tried to work the 11th step when I was on the third step. I wanted to know what God's will was. But see, it didn't say that. It said we made a decision to turn our will and our life over to the care of God as we understand Him. And see, for me, God is good orderly direction. God is Narcotics Anonymous. God is the spiritual principle. God, my God, is the steps. So when I turn my will and my life over to the care of my God, or the God as we understand Him, I am turning that over to step 4 through 12. And I begin this journey of change. And in step 4 and 5, four through nine, I clean up my past. Okay? So I cannot do step 11 thoroughly. I can try to do it. I can meditate. I can do some things. But really, it gets deeper when I'm not sitting in a pile of trash. I got to clean that up. I have to do an inventory. I have to share it with somebody else. I have to get perspective. I have to share it with my higher power. My higher power is the fellowship. It's my sponsor. It's the spiritual principles. So, you know, and then I have to weed through all those character defects. And, you know, when I got clean, we took a piece of paper, we folded it in half, we wrote our character defect on one side, and we wrote the spiritual principle that counteracted the defect on the other side, and that's how the change started. Like, how do I get from this side of the page to this side of the page? This is not mystical. Okay? If you want to stop being dishonest, be honest. You know, if you want to stop stealing, you stop stealing. Okay? Now, there's a long way in the middle there that you got to, like, go through process where maybe you stop 3 days and then you do it 2 and then you stop 4 days and then you do it 1 and, you know, but that's the gist of it. I wanted to make it a whole lot more painful and a whole lot more complicated, and I'm going to tell you that I did. You know, that I had to be knocked to my knees with my character defects. And what was revealed to me, my clean date is on April the 28th, 1987, and what's been revealed to me through my years here in recovery is that when the way to get my character defects removed for me is to work steps 8 through 12. I can write about them, read about them, and I can even make attempts to have them removed. But see, it says in there, we were entirely ready for God. We were entirely ready for God. Well, God for me is the steps, and God for me is the fellowship, and God for me is other people, and God for me is spiritual principles, then it's going to be God, the steps, spiritual principles that are going to remove those. And how do they get removed? Well, I'm going to work 8 through 12. When I work 8 through 12, the majority or all my defects are removed. Okay? I'm owning my part. I'm making a list. I'm making amends. I'm correcting what I've done in the past. I'm cleaning it up. I'm in step 9 as well. And then in step 10, okay, so here we are to my topic. In step 10, I'm doing it on a daily basis. I'm addressing these character defects. My biggest character defect is self-righteousness. Okay, we continue to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, okay, that's going to counteract self-righteousness and a million other character defects, and promptly admitted it. So I begin this journey of, I'm no longer just saying, please remove the, you know, like, for me, it has to be practical. For me, I have to see it. For me, it has to be tangible. And in the 10th step, I can see, like, my character defects in 8, 9, 10, they're being removed. In 11, I begin to stop praying for my self-centered wants, and I begin to pray for knowledge of my God only. Okay, and my God is spiritual principles. My God is the fellowship. My God is the people. Or people, not just people in Narcotics Anonymous anymore. And then in step 12, my selfless, selfish, self-pity, self-sorrying, self-loathing, self-serving self is removed when I begin to help someone else and be of service to the world. It began in Narcotics Anonymous, but to be of service, then my care and practice these principles. Okay, so the principles in all my affairs. The principles in 12 that it talks about are the principles that I wrote on the opposite side of the page to my character defect. So there's work to be done that comes back to that step. You know, the last years of my recovery, probably 5, 6, 7 years, have been really focused on the 11th step a lot. And in order to stay clean and clear in an 11th step, I have to be doing that daily inventory. I have to, you know, be working those other steps, or else I'm just going to get cluttered up again. But that's where I've been. And for me, it's just been a long journey of like, you know, when I first got clean, I did start meditating. I don't know how long I was, but maybe it could have been the first time I did the 11th step. But I did simple things, like I wasn't out of step guide, but I did simple things like I used to do what I called the 3-minute meditation. I would set the timer on the microwave, I would lay on my kitchen floor, and I would breathe and try not to think for 3 minutes. Felt like an eternity. I prayed a lot. We saw through prayer and meditation, I was really heavy, and I could still be very heavy-handed on the prayer. You know, and I learned something new today, too, that I was reading wrong in our literature. It's just a really cool thing about doing a topic meeting. It says that prayer is talking to God. Find it. Okay, it said that. Oh man, darn it! I don't want to get. Says something about that prayer is talking to God and meditation is listening to God, but that's not what the literature says. Now I can't find where I wrote it down. It says something different. Okay, it says prayer is asking for God's help is what the literature says. So I've been walking around for 27 years quoting it wrong. I was saying that prayer is talking to God and meditation is listening to God, but the literature actually says that in prayer, the prayer is asking for God's help. Missed that. I've been chatting a lot. So see, I'm still a work in progress. That's what this is all about. Like I mean, it blew me away when I saw that today, because I've shared it and quoted it and everything. And like, I just never know. Like, I could leave here tomorrow, everything I say would be like, what the heck was I talking about? And meditation is listening for God's answer. So I'm just going to read it one more time. Prayer is asking for God's help. Meditation is listening for God's answer. And I learned something new. And who knows, that could have a profound effect on the way that I pray and meditate. Because I've been talking to God for long. I mean, I don't know. Like, I pray for things. And I've had to unpray for things. I pray to win the lottery. I mean, I just am consumed with self. Like, I was raised Catholic, and I just have this thing that, like, God, you know, like, even though I said what God believes in, I'm confused a lot. And I think, like, I should be given stuff. And that, like, I don't know, I should get whatever I ask for immediately. Like, I pray to catch fish when we go fishing. I'm like, please, God, let me catch a fish. Like, and then I'm mad if I don't. Like, I blame somebody. You know what I mean? It's just like, it's ingrained in me so deep. Like, this is a lifelong journey. And I am simply in the process. Simply in the process. So, you know, I began this journey, though, of talking less. You know, and maybe I need to start asking for God's help more, because I really was just talking to God. But I started doing a lot more meditation. So I went from this person who, like, I did the 3-minute meditation, and then I bought a CD, and I started, like, laying in bed at night and listening to someone else's voice other than my own. I wasn't capable of completely quieting my mind, but I was capable of listening to something else. And that was huge. I started listening in meetings as a form of meditation, because I'm listening for God's help, even though I didn't know that until like a few hours ago. I think I knew it internally, I just never read it. So I'm coming into meetings, and I'm looking at meetings as a form of meditation, because someone shared that with me. That when you come into a meeting and you stop chattering in your own mind, then you can listen to the speaker and you can begin to get the answers. You can get God's answers. So my meditation began to expand. And, you know, so I went from a person who couldn't sit still, who could barely do a 3-minute meditation. And like 2 years ago, I went off to a temple somewhere, and I sat in meditation for 10 days. I did not talk. I did not read. I did not pray. I did not make phone calls or technology or nothing. It was kind of scary. I wanted to do it for a long time, and I did it, and I completed it. And it was a beautiful thing. It was very guided, and it was about... concentrating, and it wasn't even really about listening to anything. It was a very specific form of meditation. I'm not going to go into all the details, but when that was over, I just, I'm going to tell you, I like went to the mountain basically and like sat with them, you know, sat in silence. And when I came down off the mountain, so to speak, for lack of a better description, like, nothing really, like, I know that I was changed. I know that I was different, but not really. Because now what? So now what? Like, I came home and somebody ran their car through our front fence. So the message is, it doesn't matter what mountain you go to, when people still run through your yard with their car. And how are you going to deal with it? How are you going to deal with it? I did a 500-hour yoga training, so I teach yoga and meditation, so I'm very versed, educated, whatever, in, so to speak, you know what I mean? And but really what I am is a student. What I found out is that Narcotics Anonymous isn't the only one on the search. Like, people have been searching for prayer and meditation for the beginning of time. I didn't know that for a long time. I mean, I know it, and I've known it for a while, but I'm just like, I didn't know that we were the only ones on this search. You know, I go and I do things with people who aren't in the fellowship, who are on the same journey, maybe in a different way. Like, just trying to walk a spiritual way of life. And so one of the things that I did want to read, because I thought this was really important when it came to the 11th step and trying to search different meditation techniques. It said that meditation is a practice in which an individual trains the mind and is... Good God, I can't see. Where's my light?
kitchen.
Where did I put it? The kitchen.
No. I had a little flashlight. Here it is. I got it. There we go. It strains the mind and induces the mode of consciousness either to realize some benefit or as an end itself. It says the term meditation refers to a broad variety of practice. And then it describes it as much like the term sport. It includes techniques, and it goes on to talk about different techniques. But I never really thought about it before. Like when you use the word sport, I mean, you could be talking about basketball, baseball, Ravens, Steelers, Ravens beating the Steelers. You could be talking about, anything. Skateboarding, synchronized swimming. Well, meditation is the same type of term. The same type of term. And there are many, many ways to meditate. Mindfulness, visualization, imagery. You can sit, you can lie, you can have one pointed focus, you can stare into a candle, you can meditate and walk, you can do moving meditation of some sort, Tai Chi, yoga. You can use mantra beads, you can do, mula beads or rosary. You can chant mantras quietly, silently, aloud. You can use breath control or breathing. The endless types of yoga, Bikram, Kundalini. You can do Anapana meditation, chanting. Again, we do a lot of Native American sweat lodge. And they're not all NA endorsed. I'm just sharing that there's a lot of different ways. And, one of the things that I do with sponsees when they're only 11 steps is I have them do three different types of meditation in a group. They can do meditation alone. And that's not forcing anything. They can pick anything they want. Just as a way to open up the mind and broaden our perspective. There's also like a law, how did it make you feel? What did you experience? That type of thing. We saw through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God. I talked about what my God was and the power to carry that out. And, I talked about, praying for things and just coming from, that perspective. And for me, it's been such a long journey with the 11th step, and I know for me, and the reality of it is that God's will for me is to do the 12th step. To carry this message. To practice these principles in all my affairs. See, we talk about carrying the message to the addict who still suffers, but there's a second part of the 12th step that is my higher power's will for me, and that's practicing these spiritual principles in all my affairs. And that's a lifelong journey. Mm-hmm. And I need power to do that. Because left to my own devices, I will act out on a character defect in a minute still. And in such ridiculous ways. Like I have this bad habit when I go into the dentist's office or the doctor's office, I steal the rubber gloves. Because I bought some at Rite Aid and they were really cheap and I didn't like them and they have really nice ones and I just take a couple. I mean, I use them when I fish because I'm a massage therapist and I don't want to get cuts on my hands and it's just really convenient to grab a couple pairs and it's stealing. You know what I mean? But I'm a human being and I have these bizarre compulsions and I'm not going to do that anymore. I'm not going to do that anymore. I even took the dentist some fish. You know what I mean? I'll steal your gloves when you're not looking. I don't know. There's something deeply wrong with me. And I'm okay with it. I acknowledge it. I share the truth. I put it in the light. You know, we had a step, like a not a, it's not a step study. It's a Journey Continues book study at, with Living. My sponsors. Some
Living,
of the
Living Clean,
Living Clean book. And, you know, they were talking about, like, you know, looking in the mirror, like the person that you see in the mirror at home is one person, and the person you are when you're out is another person. Well, I can honestly say that those they're the same person. Like, I do things, but I also share about it. Because I know that when I share about it, I can free myself. But not only can I free myself, I can free you as well, because I know that I'm not the only person who does stuff like that. And those are the kind of things that if I keep doing and adding and, like, just, you know, stuffing down and chalking up this little thing and that little thing, like, I will find myself in a closet smoking crack. In fact, I don't know if people freebase anymore or not. I don't even know what I would do. I would probably figure it out. Buy some heroin or something. I don't know. You know, I'm willing to share with you, like, I have a lot, like, we talk about food addiction, and I, you know, I've been to treatment twice for bulimia, so I know the degradation of eating disorders and where that can take us in recovery. I know, you know, what sexual addiction and you know, that can do, and all the other things. I mean, whether you're prostituting, you're spending too much money, you're gambling, whatever it is, like, we can share it and put it in the light, because I don't know. And I lay my head down at night, and believe me, I do. It's important what you think about me, because if everybody's running around saying things about me, I might want to check it out. Like, I'm one of those persons, like, I do care how I present myself to you, and not in the way, not in the negative way, but in a way that I want to walk when I'm talking. I want to walk in meditation. I want to be able to be clear enough with who I am that I'm not embarrassed to drop to my knee at that memorial and let a tear run down my face because I have feelings. Or act silly. Or joke around on our boat, you know, and be comfortable in my skin with who I am. And I'm not 100%, but I tell you what, I'm a whole lot freer than I ever expected that I would be. You know, had a lot of, you know, even with Alan's health and being in the hospital and, like, him falling out on the floor and calling an ambulance and, like, I don't know, like, I have just shown up to the plate, like, the woman that I'm supposed to be. Like, you know, and that's just the way I've been able to walk. You know, there's still work to be done in all my relationships. But I'm really grateful to be clean. I, again, officially think that, like, we can no longer say that we don't like campouts anymore. Like, I think we're real trained jungle fighter campers. And we have mastered the art of sleeping on plywood.
Sweet.
And, right, well, we're not really sleeping. We're like, can you be awake and asleep at the same time? That's what it feels like. And you roll over and you expect, like, I actually today took a nap and I took my pillows, because I brought pillows from home, and I laid them on the bed and I laid on the pillows just so I could feel, like, some cushion there. Anyway, thank you guys for showing up. It's late, and I don't know. I'm Denise, I'm an addict, and I'll keep coming back.
I graciously thank her for coming up and sharing her experience and her strength with us. Okay, I guess we'll just move right along. The next speaker is Bob P. from the
St. Clair
Home Group, Pittsburgh, I guess.
I'm not in my 50s, I'm in my 60s. I'm Bob, I'm an addict.
Hey, Bob.
And I'm just more comfortable sitting. It's like a discussion meeting for me, I guess. I'm a little uncomfortable talking to him. I'm not an expert at this. I'm just like she had just said, I'm just a member that has some experience. I've been clean since July 12th, 1975. And when I got clean, the literature we had was 9 pamphlets, a white book, and the key tag that said "clean and sober." It came from Jimmy Kay in the office. And I don't want to make it sound like we got clean going uphill on the way to the meeting and uphill on the way home. I'm not saying that. And it wasn't any rougher advantage than it is now to get clean. It's difficult. The thing that's a blessing in God's grace is that there's more meetings available to us. And thank God, He did a wonderful job, you know. And I know that from day one it was, I got clean in Williamsport, PA. And that's where I was introduced to NA in an institution. And I had no concept of any of the things that I heard about when I first came to NA. Admitting when you're wrong or defects or feelings. I mean, we just didn't talk about that stuff in the house I was raised in. I was raised in an alcoholic environment, so it was pretty crazy. My dad was like a drunk Archie Bunker. But when I got clean, I remember quitting, 3-4 times a day. And I said, if I ever get out of this, I'll never do it again. And I meant it each time I did it. And then I just didn't know then about addiction and how powerful the mental part of addiction is. And after I'd start getting sick, and I'd sit there and think, I mean, I just knew that I'll just do one, all these thoughts that I would think, just like everybody. I thought I was the only one that thought that way. I thought I was always going to be like this, And I just didn't know there was a way out. I went to the county jail. I was doing whatever I was doing for whatever I did. Because it says right here, we're not interested in what you did or how you did it. So you guys don't want to hear about that anyway, so I ain't going to tell you about it. So really, I mean, think about it. It doesn't matter. Just like that lady spoke tonight. Her journey was a little bit different than mine, but it still got me to the frying pan, every day, I remember going in front of that judge and he said, "You got anything to say for yourself?" And I said, "I sure do. I'm never going to do this again." There was no NA in the meetings. There was no any recovery meetings. It was ethnic orientation. And I really believed what I was telling that judge. I was never going to do it again. I didn't have any religious upbringing, whether it was Catholic or anything. I mean, my mother or father would give us money to go to church, go to church, and we'd put the money in the pinball machines, And when the judge said your parole's effective, by the time that noise went from his desk to my ear, I thought, who's holding? We've got to stop. And as I'm sitting here, I said I would never do it again. I believed it in my heart. And it wasn't until I came here and you guys said the same thing, and A said it was an addiction, and it's mental, physical, and spiritual, and they educated me about what my problem was. And I just felt like, this dude said, half this room's going to be dead, loaded, or in jail next year at this time. And I said, it ain't going to be me. It ain't going to be me, because I'm going to listen to this dude. I'm going to listen to every word he got to say, because I'm not going back. And I didn't go back. God's grace, not me. I look back on it. I mean, there was times where I probably took credit for it that I'm not aware of, but, you know, my chest all puffed out, like I'd leave a, you know, a meeting in a jail or someplace we reached out and helped somebody, but today, you know, if God's grace was an ocean, I'd be sinking right now, man. I know, we all be sinking. And I'm so grateful, like that lady said tonight, all the things she said she was grateful for, you know. And then working through the steps, like it says here, what she had said about, I just wanted, because I think you were right when you said, that's what it says, what prayer is. It's communication. And they, and when I first started praying, of course, it was, you know, they, you know, it was a group, it was the people and the program, and since I've been clean, people failed me, not deliberately, or, you know, people fail me. But one thing has never failed me is God. And in the beginning, I didn't understand all that stuff. I'd sit there and I'd pray and I'd ask for things when I was in a jackpot clean. Get me out of this. I'll never do it again. You know, I got in a relationship with somebody and she'd say, get lost. Or I'd tell her to get lost, whichever one got lost, you know. Or if I'd lose a job or, you know, I'd always, it was a jackpot. And but I knew that God worked through people. I knew that. I knew that. They said, you know, God works through people. So that stuck with me in the beginning. So anyway, when I got to step 10, I worked the steps. And the first 10 steps, I think it's a foundation to set me up for, you know, the prayer and meditation. Because, you know, prayer is basically communicating our concerns to a power greater than ourselves. Period. That's it. That's what it says. Prayer is communicating our concerns to a power greater than ourselves. And for me, I'm a Christian, and Christ is my higher power. And it also talks about different things in here. Many of us have been exposed to many religions and meditative disciplines before coming to NA. Some of us were devastated by this stuff. I was never exposed to anything. I was exposed to NA and the steps, and I believe in my heart, I know where the steps came from, where they first came from originally. And if you do your history, you'll find out where it came from. And I'm not going to get into the history lesson or anything, but I just remember when I was 30 years clean, and there was something missing. There was just something missing. And I would go to church with my family, my kids, and my wife. And this dude was up there, and it was a religious type of, it was a Lutheran church, so it was a religious thing. And I couldn't identify with any of the, all that bullshit with all the ups and downs and putting this out and doing this. And I just couldn't identify with it. When he started to tell stories about how people got healed from being a hooker, and the stories that he would talk about, it just drew me. It kept getting thirstier for me. This is just my story. This is an NA story. This is how and it wasn't for this book and you people, I wouldn't have what I have today. It's important for you to know that. Because I've been, I've had people, since I've shared my experience and my strength, have, you know, given me feedback, negative feedback about what my faith is. And I've learned to weather that storm also. And I'm only telling you my story. I'm not trying to shove nothing down nobody's throat. It's not NA. NA does not endorse any of this stuff. And I get nervous sometimes. Should I say anything about it? Should I not say anything about it? But I remember sitting there with a bunch of men. It was 13 men. We sat and we started to meet. It was a 2-year journey for me, 2.5-year journey. And I wanted to become a better father, a better husband, a better sponsor, a better employee, a better man. And some of the things I was thinking, some of the things I was talking, some of the things I was feeling. For example, when I was with my wife, I didn't want to think about other women. It might sound stupid to some guys, but that's just the way I was thinking at the time. And I just didn't feel clean. I felt dirty. You know what I mean? And I started to pray for that. Boom. It was gone. I'm talking in weeks. I couldn't believe it. So that's what kept me, it drew me back. Just like when I first came to NA and I walked through that door and I felt, looking back on it, I didn't know it at the time, I have not had an obsession from the day I walked through that treatment center till this day. I've thought about doing crazy stuff. I've thought about buying drugs and flipping it and making money. I've thought about doing the wrong thing a lot of times, and I've done the wrong things, like she said about taking a pair of gloves. You know, take something from work that don't belong to me. You know, can I clean it up? Do I go tell the boss I did it and get fired, or do I replace it, or what do I do? I still deal with stuff like that, you know. But it wasn't until I continued to keep going there, kept going and practicing until I was, I'm talking when I'm clean a long time. I went through all the stuff that we go through. You know, like in the morning I'd pray and at night I'd thank him, and through the day, you know, admit I was wrong and, you know, work steps. But it wasn't until I was clean about 30 years, 32 years, and I just had this hunger to be closer to God, and didn't realize it, that he was setting me up. He was setting the table for me. God was setting the table for me. But looking back on it, I didn't know this at the time. And when I came home, and for 3 years I was walking with these men, and they were teaching me how to pray, and helping people, and going to the mission, and going doing different things, and it was all God's will. It was all learning about God, and it was, a lot of it was still here. Then when I came home, and my wife said she wanted a divorce, and for 30 years, you know, not for 30, but for like 17 years, the only thing that meant anything to me was being clean, working, and being there for my family. It was the worst thing that ever could have happened to me, you know, for me at that time, up until that point. And I believe, looking back now, that he was setting the table for me. And I was, for me to say thank you for taking my family was even more difficult. But I knew that he had something for me. I became a stronger person behind it. And it was through prayer, and I would ask God. I mean, when she told me that, I had the keys to the where I go. It's a big church. And one of the guys there, his name's Tunch Ilkin, and he's an ex-stealer. He's the head of men's ministry where I go to. And he came into church, and I was crying, and he hugged me. And he said a prayer for me. He didn't try to fix me. He just prayed for me. He said, now everything that you've been taught in the last, now it's time to go to work. Now it's time to go to work. So what I did was I surrounded myself with men that were God-centered, that were in recovery. And every day, about 3:30, 4:30 in the morning, I would go to this gym and I would meditate and pray, and I would ask God to fill the void that I was in my life. And the only thing I can say is that when I pray, like the step says, we sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him. Praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. It takes a whole new meaning on when you're in a storm. For me it did anyway. I mean, I've been to a lot of rodeos in 39 years. But I just felt like there was a target on my back. When I started to, the closer I became to God, the bigger I thought my target was. I went through hepatitis C treatment a couple times. There's another guy in this room tonight, and I know he's going through the same thing. And the second round of treatment, they did a sonogram, and they said, "We need to come. You need to come in. We need to talk. We've got problems." They said that I had liver cancer, and I was going to die in 18 months. That was last September, October. The first thought that came to my mind was, "Thank you, God. I know you got something for me. I don't know what it is, but I know you got something for me." The next thought was, "You could have gave me a broken arm, a car wreck. Did you have to give me cancer?" You know. What I'm saying to you is that the last 8 years I've become so intimate with God, and it was because I kept going to the place I go to. Like the lady was just talking about. It was practice. I kept going. And a lot of times you hear people saying they don't believe in fake it till you make it. And I wasn't like faking it, but I just kept going. It was, you know, the trip that I had to make from here to here was a long, painful trip for me. And so when I shared this with my friends in recovery and the men that are in my men's Christian group that have been with me for the last 8-9 years, everyone surrounded me, and especially the men's group I was in, just like we do, we call, you know, people come to you, they get around you and they pray, or they sit down and talk and listen to your story, and they love you. And they try to change you, but they know they can't. You're powerless, just like a friend of mine's here tonight. Her son overdosed and died 3 months ago, 4 months ago. And I can't even conceive me losing my son, because my son's so important to me. So I went to the doctor, and he told me that I was going to die in 18 months to make a bucket list. That's what he said, make a bucket list. I said, "Really?" He said, "We're going to start treatment next week." I said, "Are you?" I said, "Well, let me see if I can come up with another option here." So I went to a different doctor, different situation. And I went to see this guy, and he's supposed to be one of the best in the country. He said the same thing. He said, "I wish I could tell you something different, but I see 20 tumors." He pulled them up on a screen. He said, "This is the one that's going to kill you right here." It was a vascular tumor. He said, "I've been doing this 30 years. He said, "But let's do some blood work. Just check this out." Now, the whole time, these guys from Haiti up were praying for me, specifically for me. And I can't tell you, and this isn't like weird shit. I mean, I could feel people praying for me. I'm telling you, as I'm sitting here at night, I just started crying. Not because I was dying, but I mean that too. But seriously, when you spiritually bury yourself, you know, oh man, what a trip! And there's a dude sitting right beside me. He's going through the same thing, man, and he's not as blessed as I was yet. And his doctor said, "We're going to do some blood work." Did some blood work. He says, "You know what? Yeah, let me do this biopsy." And he did a biopsy. He says, "You know what? It's inconclusive. I'm going into surgery. I'm going in. It's going to take 2 hours. I want to make sure this is what I know it is." So for 2 months, I buried myself. And, you know, the things that I was going through in my mind and in my heart, I got so close. I felt like he was sitting like right here for me, man. I'm telling you. And it was only because I kept going and I kept trying, like she was saying, you just got to keep going, or you got to keep practicing. just like when we used to go to the dope, and I used to go to the same guy thinking he's going to give me the real stuff this time. Yeah, he will. I know he will. He won't beat me this time. I'm going to beat every time. So, I don't know. The only thing I can tell you is that I had surgery, and my daughter was there. After I was there like 2 days, my daughter was there, and my one friend, who's in my men's group, walked down the hall to get my discharge paper, and this guy could hear, "Plumber!" And I look around, and it's the guy behind me. I said, "Who are you?" He told me his name, and he said, "We were praying for you last night." I said, "Who are you?" He says, "Me and my sponsor, Mickey Harvey, a bunch of us were praying for you last night." I couldn't stop crying. Just the love that I felt, man. I'm telling you, man, you just got to keep coming. If you think you're missing something, like, is this all there is? You know, work, eat, sleep, relationships, job, cars, you know. Just like that one dude that had all those Super Bowls from Boston, the Patriots. You know, he talks about, is that all there is in life? Just all this stuff, one super, you know, there's something missing. And I knew there was something missing way back when I was with my kids at that church. I felt that thing that I felt when I walked through the treatment center, when that guy says, "Next year at this time, half this room is going to be dead, loaded, or in jail." And I said, "Not me. I'm going to listen to this guy." So when someone tells you something in here, and you're starting to feel it in here, remember I said God works through people. He's working through me. He's working through you. Sometimes you just got to, the meditation that she just talked about, it's by people coming to NA. It's sitting there. It's just, "Shut up. I'm talking to you. Shut up. I've been where you're at. I'm trying to teach you." "No, but you don't understand. This bitch is my problem," you know. Or "this dude's," you know, whatever it is. I mean, you know what I'm saying. For me, I have to shut up. Someone's trying to love me right now. Someone's just trying to give me love, and I'm just like shutting it off. And that's what, for me, that's what it was. So when that guy said to me, he says, "We were praying for you last night, man." And I started crying with joy. See, because it was 8 weeks, 6 weeks into it, I felt like, "I'm ready, man. I'm ready." I came to a point in my life, 60 years old, I was okay with it. I'm ready. Because I had a fear of my son, he's leaving high school, going into college, up to the slimy pebble. He knows where it's at. Slippery Rock College. And I was worried about my little boy because I'm all he had, you know, from the divorce and everything. When I spoke here 3 years ago, I was the main speaker. I was in a coma, an emotional coma. Just left, you know, my house, didn't want to leave. And I'm telling you, from that point till now, the journey that I've been on is unbelievable. So I went in to see the doctor. The whole team of doctors were there. And he said to me, he says, the results came back and it's not cancer. I said, "What did you say? Did you say it's not cancer? The 30 years experience that you have and all them screens and MRIs, it's not, did you say not cancer?" And they all started laughing. They said, "Yeah, that's what we just said." He started to say what it was. I said, "I don't care what it is. I don't care what it is. It's not cancer." I felt the Holy Spirit. I mean, that's different lingo for some people here. I'm not trying to wig you out. I'm just telling you, the goosebumps, they're not chili bumps for me no more. That's the Holy Spirit coming in my heart, saying, "It's going to be okay. I got you, man. Just relax." And I'm not talking about the end result of not being cancer. See, because 6 weeks into it, I was okay with it. Because there's guys I know, and one of them Kim's husband, when I was sitting there talking to him in an AA meeting over in Aetna one night, he said, the same doctor. I said, he said, Plummer, I heard you, you know. Yep, I went to Dr. So-and-so. Yeah. He said, I'm going there Monday. Ardo. I'm going there Monday. I'm 24th on the list. And then, like, less than 10 days later, someone said he's on a table. I said, for what? He went to see that doctor and they, you know, put him the top, you know, he died on the table. Liver transplant. But when he said I didn't have cancer, the first thought came to my mind. It wasn't my son or my family. I was like, thank you. Thank you. Yeah, there you go. I got his attention. It's okay. He's at the meeting. He's at the meeting.
He's meditating.
I slept many meetings, man. He's meditating. So, I don't want to put nobody else to sleep here. But what I'm saying is, step 10, you know, it's a freeing step for me. I don't have to wait until where it says we promptly admit when we're wrong. When I'm in a beef with somebody about whatever it is, usually it's over cars because I'm always in my car driving, and that's why I always have K-Love on, because it's like chills me out, man. I can't now up here. It's 98.3, but I went to Wendy's to get a quick sandwich before I came here because I knew they weren't going to have no food. I mean, for me anyway. I mean, because I didn't pay for it. But I walked in because my radio station I listened to, K-Love, shut off when I got to Indiana. So I was in Wendy's and I heard this music. I said, whoa, what's the difference? What station is that? And they said 97.7. And for me, there are certain things I do, like she's talking about. After you're clean a while, the same things ain't working no more. I'm telling you. You think that's all there is in this program? You're wrong. Just keep looking, man. Keep turning that stone over. Keep reading this book. Keep turning the pages. Find out what other dudes are doing. Find out what some guys have that you want. Like my man Dennis. Come, it was just terrible. You know, you get around guys that, wow, I like, there's something about him I like. What's he doing? Don't matter how long you're clean. I got 39 years. He got 9 or 10. Who cares? I had, when my wife and I split, my ex-wife and I split, there was a kid I was sponsored with, 30 days clean. Helped save my life. He helped save my life. He called me every day. Plum, you okay? Are you okay, Plum? Yeah, I'm okay. How about you? I always want to turn it back on somebody else. Don't want no one to love me. I said, I'm okay, and I start talking about it. You know what I mean? He's clean today. I never let him forget it either. Because there's times, I'm telling you, man, my son's just started playing football, you know, and I gave him a Bible, and inside the Bible I said, if I can't give you anything I've ever given, if I never gave you anything, which I give him everything you want, this is one thing I want to give you. And, you know, where it said, when they put in the, you know, when it was an all-star East-West game, it says your favorite phrase and stuff, and all these guys were quoting these other idiots. He said, and I started crying when I read it. It said, I can do all things through Christ who gives me strength. So he's having a hard time. He wants to give up. School don't start till Monday. He wants to give up from 6:30 in the morning till 10:30 at night. You know, and he said, Dad, this ain't me, man. I don't want no one screaming at me, you know, for 14, 15 hours. I said, now it's time to go to work. You got to put the armor on, man. The helmet, the shield, the breastplate, the sword. I got the statue for him. And it's Ephesians, you know, it's one of the quotes in Scripture. And it comes right out of here. It's right in the same book. Saying it's just worded differently. They cleaned it up, just like the Serenity Prayer. The long version. Look up, Google the long version of the Serenity Prayer. Google it once. See, we had to chop it up. So we didn't want to hurt no one's feelings. Like the lady said up tonight on the podium, don't say sober. Might hurt someone's feelings. Chase them out of here. I got clean, man. Huh? 5 minutes. And I'm not endorsing no program. Don't get me wrong. I'm not doing that. I'm just saying it's my story. That's where when I got clean in Williamsport, it was NA, 3 meetings a week and 4 AA meetings a week. When I moved to Midland, PA, it was only AA. And we started the first NA meeting May 10th of 78. So, and I kidnapped 3 people from the AA program. They were dope fiends. Just like me. I said, let's go. Where are we going? Just follow me. Let's go, man. You know, one died. The other two are still around, but that's right. You know, the first meeting was an H9 meeting too, for a year. NA saved my life. I owe everything to NA. And it talks about here too in the 11th step about when we do get involved in these other things that help us stay clean, we can't get lost in that and forget that we're addicts first. Mm-hmm. I'm an addict first. And I know guys do get lost, you know, and they stop. I see them and I try to grab them. They cuss too much for me. Okay, I'm sorry to hurt your feelings, buddy. You know, then clean up your thoughts and your actions and hang around different people. You don't have to hang around the people that say the F word all the time. And one guy said that, so I got him a T-shirt. It says, the new F word, forgiveness.
That's good.
So, I mean, you can look at different things in different ways, you know. The only thing I know is if I wouldn't have come to NA, man, I wouldn't be sitting here. I'd be a dead man. And I learn something new every time, just like she just said. Every day I'm learning something new. If you think you're done learning, man, just keep coming, man. It's... what a ride. These last 3 years have been the most painful 3 years, but the most rewarding 3 years. It made me stronger, more insight, closer to God, closer friends. I got rid of all the bullshit. And there's bullshit here.
Yeah.
For me. Now, that same bullshit for me isn't bullshit for somebody else. I'm not saying I'm better than anybody. But just get around the people who are going to hold you accountable where you want to be at. You know, some people talking shit, go talk shit. I don't want to hear it no more. I'm going over here with these guys. And we still eat together, though, down after the meeting. We all sit together. You know, I'm not better than anybody. The thing that's cool, though, is you guys listen to what I have to say. And some people form opinions and some don't, and that doesn't matter. But we're all here doing the same thing. We're all here doing the same thing. That's all. I'm done talking.
All right. Thank you, speakers, Denise and Bob, very much.